Hi Linda,
how are you? Sitting here inside my little hoot chair, spread on my bed, getting ready to hit the rack in a little while. And thought I'd just try to start another tape here. I don't know if I'll finish it all tonight or not. Depends on how much energy I have. But I'd be able to get a good bit on it anyway. I got your tape day before yesterday, your professional music tape. That was outstanding. That low noise tape that you sent with the recap of the news. Most of it I'd heard before because I had gotten the mail from Fubai and everything. And so, but it was still good to hear a recap of the whole, what you've been doing and everything. Also got a letter from you today saying that you had gotten one of my tapes. That's the one I made. I remember making it at 3 o'clock in the morning. That was a little weird, but just one of those things you do at the spur of the moment and put it in the mail and send it anyway. So I imagine that was kind of a gem. I told you on the last tape that I sent, I think, that I got your brownies okay, and they came in good shape, and I didn't have to use them for baseballs or throw them at people or play pitch and catch with them. We ate them, and they were pretty good. Like you say, it is kind of amazing that they stayed intact over such a long period of time, but they seem to come through pretty good, considering. You said that you wrote to Mesa, the school out in Mesa, Arizona. That sounded like a pretty good idea to me. But better to know one way or the other than sit there hanging on the end of a string, you know, waiting for them to make up their mind what they're going to do. It's funny the way people are like that, you know. They should know that it's important that, you know, you want to make some plans for what you have to do and everything else, and yet they hang on to these stupid things, and they won't say anything. They won't even say, you know, that they're considering you, but they don't know now, and they'll know in a couple of weeks or anything. They just hang on to these dumb things and wait till you have to write to them to ask them what the deal is. It's not very considerate, but it seems to be the way most organizations operate. I don't know why, but at least you'll find out one way or the other exactly what's happening. Doesn't really surprise me too much that you've firmly implanted in your mind to become a stewardess, especially with the teaching situation, you know. If you'd pull through with your job in Arizona or up in Colorado, someplace where you get away from everybody and, you know, have some little excitement here and there, I could see maybe, you know, just pressing on and going right into the teaching and everything, but the idea of teaching around Lubbock doesn't really sound like it'd be the most exciting thing in the world to do. And I think your reasoning makes sense, you know. I mean, if you ever decide you have the gift to be a stewardess, you know, now is about the only time. I'm not sure, but I think only single girls are allowed to be stewardesses. If I'm correct, I'm not sure. And I was also interested, you said that if you get a job with Braniff, you said that you can go to South America. And I was wondering if you had to have seniority to do that, or maybe you don't know yet either. Well, that'd be outstanding. Hop on the Miami to Rio de Janeiro run or something. That'd really be outstanding. Get on down to South America for a couple days out of the month. Yeah, that'd be pretty good. It sounds, even if you don't get the, you know, you get stuck with the domestic run, I think, which, you know, means staying in the States, right? I think it'd be pretty good. You know, you get to see a few cities anyway, at least the busy cities where you'd be operating from. I think some of the girls, they go on these, like, little round, you know, they have, like, little round robin things, you know, like they may have maybe three different routes, and there may be four or five cities on the routes. I may be wrong on this, maybe you can correct me, but I'm under the impression that if you work in the States, you know, maybe you'll go from, let's say your home place ends up being in Lubbock, so maybe you go from Lubbock to Dallas, and from Dallas to oh, I don't know, Colorado, and then maybe to California and New Mexico, back to Dallas or Lubbock. And that's like one round trip, and maybe you'll make that that run, you know, maybe once a month or something. And then there's another run you have to, from Dallas to New Orleans to Chicago to back to Dallas or Lubbock or something like that. And then maybe you make that one another time during the month. I think that's the way it works. I'm not sure. And with your friend Janie there becoming a stewardess, maybe you know a little bit more about it. But I'd be interested to hear, you know, exactly what the situation is. I was also wondering on that, about becoming a stewardess, you know, if you get the job, how long before you get it, and how long is the school, you know, how long before you start making money, and do you make the money while you're in the school? It would seem to me that you would, they'd have to pay you while you go to school. But, yeah, I can't see any other way that they couldn't. So, and... So it would seem as though you should actually get your full pay, but maybe you don't. Maybe you get half pay or something while you're going to stew school there, and then you get your full pay after you start working. But anyway, when you find out the details, I'd be interested to know. But it sounds like a pretty good idea to me. Good way to get out of Lubbock and get around a bit, a little excitement. You mentioned it on your... on this other tape, you know, about your accident and everything. You just said that you got $2,300 for a car. It sounded good. And that you picked up a new one, all brown, and or chestnut colored, you call it, like a horse. I don't know if I've ever seen a chestnut horse. Or I've probably seen one, but I wouldn't know if I saw one, if you know what I mean. I really don't know why. I can kind of picture it, I guess. I think I may need a picture. But it sounded pretty nice. Sounded like a pretty good machine. And, I was wondering, too, if anybody determined exactly what the cause of the wreck was. You know, I mean, they decided, you know, was it all your fault, or was the guy in front of you, you know, stopped quickly and didn't have any brake lights, or, you know, what was exactly the deal? I was wondering about that, too. Let's see. Moving down my page of notes here. Perfectly organized. I have everything written on notes that I want to say. So there won't be much void time in the tape for a change. I find that it cuts down on the ahs and oohs quite a bit when you get around to make out an outline. Next thing is I had written here was that... about your music tape there. That was just outstanding, you know. You sent that low noise tape, right? And you said you'd gotten a jack, and you could tell because that cut down all the outside noise, you know, which is really good. Not only that, but I now have first class brand new music. I have the newest music in our hooch. Everybody comes in here and I turn on my music. It's pretty loud, you know, you can hear it all over. Everybody comes in and goes, God, what's that song? I never heard that one, because, you know, the radio over here is only probably about 4 months behind, and we don't get the reception over here very well anyway. So, it's cool to hear all the new sounds. At least they sound new to me. I don't know, maybe they've been on the radio for a month already back home, but, you know, popular music changes pretty fast. And some of those groups, yeah, good, Andy, right? Some of those groups that you rattled off there, I never even heard of some of them. I don't know where they came from, but there's some good sounds. I really enjoyed it. I don't know, Phil may be able to help you on this, but I have a feeling that maybe if you recorded that at a little lower level, in other words, like, you know, I assume what you're doing is you've got a jack into your little recorder, and then you plug it into the Phil's, you know, player, and then the volume on the tape would be adjusted by the volume you set on Phil's player, right? I think that if you turn the volume on Phil's player down a little bit, so that when you play it back, you have to turn the volume on your player, you know, like, all right, you turn the volume on Phil's down quite a bit, you record the thing, and you take it out, and you rewind it, and then you play it back on your cassette, or, yeah, your cassette tape player. You want it so that you have to turn the volume up a little bit. I've noticed my sister sent me a pre-recorded tape, and I noticed that you have to turn the volume up considerably on those. But I think by doing that, what it does is it cuts down on the distortion. You know, if you record at a high level, it tends to make it distorted for some reason. Whereas if you record at a low level and then turn it up to play it back, it supposedly cuts down the distortion. I'm not sure on that. Phil maybe knows more about it. But I read that someplace or somebody told me about that one time when I was talking about, you know, having tapes made for my car. So that might be a way to make it even better. But well, I couldn't believe it, that between that low noise tape and the jack cutting out all the other sounds, it really sounds outstanding. My biggest problem is I don't have enough batteries. You know, they sell them over here in the BX, and I've scrounged up about all I can get. You know, and it takes six of those C batteries to run my my thing here. Man, I go through those things just like water. You know, cause man, I got the thing on, I'm playing music all the time. My sister sent me a couple of pre-recorded tapes, plus all the ones that you sent me, you know. And you know me, I'm a big lover listening to music when I sit around. So I got the thing going all the time. A couple of times I was so mad I couldn't believe I had this brand new set of batteries. I turn on my thing and I'm listening to Three Dog Night there before I hit the rack. And I fall asleep. I wake up in the morning and the thing is still running. I couldn't believe it. So I took care of one set of batteries. Zap, just like that. Brand new set. Couldn't believe it. I kicked myself, so I don't listen to it before going to bed anymore. It really ticked me off. So anyway, it's really great. I really enjoy the music. Next time you get the big urge to make another music tape, you know that one you sent me with Chicago on it, right? Well, I ran out of blank tapes, and I had to tape over that one and send it back to you. You know, if I wanted to send any tapes. The problem there has been solved now because they got some blank tapes in over at the BX here, and I've stocked up on a whole bunch of them. That's what one of these are. This is one of my own originals for a change. What I've been doing is, you know, taking tapes that I've gotten and I just tape over it and send it back in the mail. And I was getting really low on them there at one point. And that was when I wasn't getting any mail. You know, I didn't have any mail for 4 weeks, and I was kept sending tapes out, and I didn't get any in. So I was really getting low, and I think it was right in the middle of one of those sets of two there, and I was down, and I didn't have anything else, so I said, well, it hurt, it really did, but I had to send that music tape. I think I said something about it when I sent the tape. And, you know, if you want to put that Chicago thing on another one, those some of those Three Dog Night songs, that'd be outstanding. So that was a good tape. It really hurt deep to have to tape over that with my... when I did. And your letter today said you're headed for the wedding this weekend. Time to get this, you have already come and gone. Hope that you had a good time. Hope you didn't get too drunk. You just see you and your friend up there. Said she's been kind of living the same type of life as you, you know. Get head of job someplace or something, and not really too much to do in her little West Texas town there. The two of you probably got together and really had a time on the town, I imagine. So that was kind of a bachelorette party with the girls. All right. Must have been a gem. You were saying about kind of being a drag about all the garbage you had to do. Well, that's the truth. I'll tell you, it's really getting kind of grim around here. I don't know what it's like at your office, but it's really something. Everybody here, I think I may not have mentioned, when I was at Fubai, I mentioned, you know, all the guys there, they were all married. When I come up here, same situation. They say over here, same. The, that guy, Jeff Desolates, I told you. Who I live with down in Florida there, or live next to down in Florida. Of course, he's married. There was one bachelor here. And he left about 2 weeks ago. I was only here about a week, and he left. He de-roast. De-roast. Word you may not know. Date estimated return from overseas. Date everybody lives for over here. It's on all calendars. You see, great big de-roast date. That's the day of days. So anyway, he de-roast about a week after I got here. So that just left all nothing but married people. And about 50% of the time, the conversation goes accordingly. if you know what I mean. You get the whole line about the wife won't let me go to Australia, and I want to go to Australia on one of my leaves, and, you know, the wife is crying because this, you know, and my kid is sick, you know, and the refrigerator's broken, and my washing machine doesn't work at home, you know, all that kind of stuff. You probably get the same garbage, except from the other end and in your office there. And it's really something that's kind of hard to take sometimes. I feel like I'm aging rather rapidly all of a sudden. It's funny, you get around that kind of stuff and you just, you know, you try, you ignore it, you know, as much as you can, because, you know, it just doesn't really have much application to your life. But over here, you know, there aren't too many people to talk to. And I don't know. These guys aren't too bad, though. We've got the one thing that saves us. We all have the same job, you know, and we're all kind of over here in the same boat. So that usually takes up a good part of the time and conversation and everything. I don't know if I told you about the guys here. I remember when I was at Fubai, where I thought I was going to be for so long, I told you about the guys there after I met them. And I ended up, but it was kind of cool. It's, in a way, it was kind of good going there, because it like adds to my knowledge of the situation here, and plus I know more facts this way, you know. And I'm up flying around, and I know all those guys down there, and I know all their call signs. You know, everything we do in the air is all by call signs. You never use anybody's name over the air, because, you know, the gooks are listening on all the radios and everything. But by knowing the guys, and I know all their call signs, you know, I can, I know who they all are, you know, and so I'll hear somebody out, and he'll be working in an area, you know, and I can call up, and I give him my old call sign that I had when I was down there. They say, oh, hi, how are you doing? We have a little conversation, and it makes it really a lot more friendly. You know, I know a lot more people that way. So in a way, it kind of had its advantage. It was annoying at the time, but it kind of has its advantage in its own way, I guess. Anyway, the guys up here, there's that guy Jeff, like I told you, and our ALO, which stands for Air Liaison Officer, and he's the head of the little operation up here. His name is Major Little, and he comes from the Bronx in New York. He's married, I don't know, quite a few years. He's got a couple of kids and everything, and he flew B-52s, F-86s, and I guess that's all. And then he's over here for his SCA tour over in O-2s, right, like all the rest of us. And he's a real nice guy. And it was kind of hard working with him at first, because he gets kind of excited, you know, but it's actually been, once I've got to know him a little bit, he's actually been a real help to me, because I'm working right now on my, putting in my, you know, my dream sheet, they call it, which gets sent to Randolph Air Force Base there in San Antonio, where they give me my assignment, you know, and you write down on the sheet what your career objectives are and everything. So his interests lie pretty much along the same line as mine. He's majored in engineering in college, and he flew 86s for a while, then he got into the AFIT program, which is Air Force Institute of Technology. And he went to school in Arizona for 2 years, and he got his master's, and he's about three-quarters of the way to his PhD, and that's high-speed fluid stability and stuff like this. It all has to do with aerodynamical engineering, though. And then he's got an application into Edwards Research and Development Pilot School, and he hopes to get into that. So, you know, these are the kind of same things that I've been interested in. So I had him help me out with my sheet there, you know, making out my dream sheet is for what kind of an assignment I want coming back from here, and the different schools and all this kind of stuff. So it's really been a big help in those lines. Of course, like I was telling you there in one of my earlier tapes, it's the way things are going, it looks like B-52 time could be here as easily as anything else. Man, it's going to really be grim. Fight the Air Force the whole way. Fight the system. Man, I can't believe it. As far as we are up here in our little world up here, you know, we get along pretty well if they just leave us alone. But Jesus, they got some guys up who are head of, you know, in charge of our operation here, and, you know, two others like it. They're in charge of Fubai, and there's a place called Camp Eagle and Evans here, and we're all the same operation, kind of. And then, of course, they get their orders from Da Nang, and Da Nang is, well, I don't know, there's a certain attitude down in Da Nang. Nobody likes to go there because it's pretty big, and it's like going to a big city. You know, we're all really friends out here, and we've got a pretty busy job, and we all stay busy, and we all try and do our work, and the most important thing is getting our job done, and because that's the most important thing. It's, I don't think I'm over-exaggerating anymore than any of the others, because down at Camp Eagle and Fubai, it was the same thing. You know, we've all got a job here. We're all way out in the boonies, and you go back to Da Nang, and all they're worried about is diddle stuff. You know, there's a colonel there, right? So he's worried about covering himself if there's an accident, you know, and where all the safety precautions taken. Well, of course there aren't safety precautions up here. Christ, we want to do something, you know, with a runway or something. There's a big hole in the runway, right? Oh, what am I going to do? Get up at 6 o'clock in the morning, go down and steal a bulldozer and go out and fill in the hole? Of course not. There's no way. There aren't even any bulldozers around. There's no way. So you put in a job thing to have the hole filled on a runway so you don't ruin the propellers on the airplanes. And it takes 2 months. And these people in Da Nang can't understand why we have a hole in our runway for 2 months. Well, you call down there and you tell them this and tell them that. And they say, well, that's too bad. We'll get to you. You know, it's so funny. You'll call up and say, Raj, this is people up here at Camp Evans, you know, and they'll go, where? And we'll say, Camp Evans, you know, you're our support base. We get all our things from you, you know, and they'll go, oh, Camp Evans. Oh, yeah, right. What can we do for you? So you'll ask them for something, and they say, well, Raj, we'll send it up, and it takes forever to get here. So it's really kind of bad. You have to kind of fight the battle at both ends. And it's toughest on the major because he's responsible for anything that happens up here, and he just doesn't have the facilities to do the Mickey Mouse Air Force stuff that you usually do. You know, like painting yellow lines on the runway and all this all this kind of stuff. I mean, we don't need any paint up here. So how are you going to do something like that? Or, you know, he may realize that it should be done, order the paint. It takes 2 months to get here. The inspector comes, there's no paint on the runway. He gets written up for it. And it looks bad in his career, you know, and it's kind of hard to put up with a system that operates like that. You can hear all the screaming in the background. There's a big card game going on out in our little room out there. A couple of the Army guys are over here. Of course, they played bridge till 5 o'clock in the morning last night. I couldn't believe it. Oh, let's see. What was I talking about? Oh, yeah. Originally, I was giving you a rundown on the people here. We got to Major Little, and let's see, and Jeff, and next one is, his name is Charlie Attardo, and he's a lieutenant like me, and he went through the same program I did. He went through Cannon, and he went through Homestead, and he went through Fairchild, and he went through Hurlburt, and the whole thing. But he's only got about a month and a half left. He's been here almost his full year now, and he's the only lieutenant here. In fact, there aren't many lieutenants at all in this operation up here. It's all captains and majors. It's really surprising. Just not many at all. So he's been the junior ranking man the whole time. But of course, since he's already been here a year, he's got rank on me by about 9 months. So that puts me as the weenie in the group. So it's no big thing, really. I mean, nobody gives you any grief about it, except just, you know, in fun, which they do all the time, you know. Charlie and I drive to dinner in the lieutenant's jeep, and everybody else goes, the captains and the majors all go in another jeep. Well, of course, everybody can't fit in one jeep anyway, so it becomes a big joke, but it's kind of cool. And he's got a nickname, Crazy Charlie, and he's crazy, I'll tell you. It's unbelievable. Like I say, he's been here about 10 months now, and he's good, and he's a good fac. I've been up with him on quite a few rides, and even the fighters, a couple of times, I've heard him say after he gets done that they, you know, because we don't work with the same guys all the time, and there are quite a few facs over here. So when a fighter pilot, you know, since we kind of run their show, you know, I mean, I can see that if you get a hold of a bad fac, you know, a guy really screws you up, you just can't work right, you know, it's one of those things. So they appreciate you doing a good job, just like you appreciate them doing a good job. And I've heard him be complimented a couple of times right there on the spot, you know. One guy even asked, what's your APO number, Bilk? Oh, see, Bilk is our call sign. We're All the facts that work for the 101st Airborne are all called Bilk facts. It's spelled B-I-L-K. And then we have a number after that. You know, like Bilk 1-2 or Bilk 1-7 or something like that. And you know, the fighter pilot says, "Well, Roger, Bilk, what's your APO? I want to send you a little letter there." He said, "That's one of the most outstanding fact jobs I've worked with," or something like that. So he's good. He knows what he's doing, which is good to ride with somebody like that. And it gives you good pointers. And he's from Pennsylvania, I think. And he's married. He got married before flying school, I guess. And he's got one kid. And so every day, or not every day, but a couple times, he gets movies in. So we all sit down and we watch the movies of his wife and his kid. You know, we sit here and watch his kid play with his toys. It's amazing, Linda. It really is. But you sit and you watch, and it's all right. It's good, I guess. He's a real nice guy, though. And we got one other guy. I got to tell you a couple of stories. Well, I probably don't have time on this side about Crazy Charlie and why he gets his name, but it's because of the crazy stuff he does, man. I'll tell you, the first time I flew with him, I was scared to death, man. I couldn't believe it, man. We're down, you know, there are mountains all over, you know, we fly into mountains, and we're in these little dead-end canyons, and we're flying down into canyons, you know, around, putting in airstrikes, and the fighters are zipping in under us and over us, and bombs are going off all around, and Charlie's just sitting there, cool as a cucumber, you know, directing all this stuff, you know. And I was about ready to jump out of the airplane. I just couldn't believe he was doing that kind of stuff. I'm going, "Charlie, there's a mountain right there," and he'll whip it around, go, "Oh yeah," you know, turn hard, just miss the trees and the rocks. Oh God, it's really something. I was riding with him back the other day, and it was a pretty calm mission for Charlie. Of course, the turbulence out there was just unreal. I mean, I've been ridden in turbulence before, but nothing like this. I thought the wings were just going to snap off the airplane. It was just unbelievable. It was so bad, as a matter of fact, that they grounded all the helicopters. They wouldn't even let a Loach, one of those little light observation helicopters that the Army has, just crashed out there from the turbulence. It just tore it apart. So here we are in our little Oscar Deuce flying around, getting bounced around the sky. So we come back, and it was a pretty tough day putting up with the turbulence. It was hard on my stomach. My orange juice didn't sit too well from breakfast. But I didn't throw up. I thought I might. It is tough when you're just sitting there riding, as you know, in a light airplane, in the bouncy skies, to not get sick. But I didn't. I didn't even get... I guess I must be getting used to it more and more, because that O2 has made me almost sick a couple of times. It's just the noise and the way it bounces around. It's so light and it wallows around in the air, you know. Anyway, we're coming back, and he hadn't scared me too much all day. It was pretty amazing. And we're back. We're about 5 minutes from the trip pattern, and you know, I said, "Well, Charlie's not going to pull anything. Crazy Charlie isn't going to live up to his name today." Well, I just said this to myself and I said it out loud. Next thing I know, we're screaming at the ground, you know, max airspeed. Airspeed indicator needle is going past the red, you know, coming around the second time, which I've learned is no big thing because Charlie does it all the time. Next thing I know, we're down, and there's a little stream that runs around way, a city away. It's not a stream, it's actually a river. And the trees go up pretty high on both sides of it. And there are fields around that on the other side of the stream. But all the people, you know, little gooks there and there, all the Vietnamese washing their clothes and everything in the river and swimming and everything. It's about 10, 11 o'clock in the morning. And I've done buzz jobs in airplanes before, but never have I ever been that low. I mean, to me, a buzz job is like 50 feet, you know, tops of the trees. But, man, we're down on the water and the trees are up on both sides of us. And zap, how we go, you know. All the gooks on the ground loved it. I couldn't believe it. They're all sitting there in their little sampans and everything and washing their clothes and everything. And we were going so fast, you know, that they couldn't hear us coming, you know, because we were really down low. And they wouldn't know we were coming until we were maybe about 20 feet from them. And all of a sudden you see these heads raised, their eyes, you can see their eyes vibrate. They jump out of their head, you know. But they loved it. As soon as we go over there, waving and smiling and laughing, you know, and all the kids are yelling and everything. It was really cool. They just loved it. So that was really a thrill. And the day before that, we came and we landed, and there was a thunderstorm just approaching the field. And this field out here is just unbelievable. It's the runways. Well, it's short, to say the least. I took off to Da Nang the other day with, I had a passenger in and all his baggage. He was going R&R, I guess. And I took off, I started rolling. It was really hot. It gets really hot down here, and you know, probably about 130, 140 out on the runway. And, you know, that decreases the performance of the airplane quite a bit when it gets that hot. So we use every bit of the runway. We go all the way down to the end, and we get the wheels even off the end of the runway, the beginning end, and you run the engines up full power, and you release the brakes, and you pedal with your feet, and you blow backwards, geez, you do anything you can to get a little more speed. And we rolled, and there wasn't any wind or anything, and we rolled, and we rolled, and this guy was in the right seat, you know, he just got done telling me how much he had flown in the O2s this month, you know, and he had 20 hours, and he was just a maintenance guy, you know, and all this. So he was really acting calm and cool and collected about the whole thing, you know, and so I asked him a couple of questions, you know, if he knew how to get out, you know, and all this kind of stuff, you know, emergency, get out of the airplane and all this. And he said, oh yeah, Raj, no sweat. So...